Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Ryan Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And this morning we're beginning our fall election series, 30 issues in 30 days. And we're beginning it as a rebroadcast of the two issues we tackled for an hour apiece last night on our national call-in special, America, Are We Ready? In the hour coming up, it's America, Are We Ready to Vote in a Pandemic? In it, we'll talk about how to cast a ballot to keep your body safe from the virus and keep your ballot safe from getting lost. Christina Greer, Fordham University political science professor, was my co-host. You'll hear great guests and you'll hear callers from Maine to California. That's America. Are we ready to vote in a pandemic? Coming up after the latest news.
Live from NPR News, I'm Korva Coleman. Late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is lying in repose at the U.S. Supreme Court. Her casket has been taken to the court's portico outdoors, where the public will have 2 days to file past it. NPR's Windsor Johnston reports from the Supreme Court, where many people have been lined up.
People stood in complete silence, except for a few who were crying. Others stood with their hands placed over their hearts as Ginsburg's flag-draped casket was carried up the steps of the Supreme Court. Dozens of her former law clerks, dressed in black, lined the steps of the building, and hundreds of people have formed a line around the court waiting to pay their final respects.
President Trump will pay his respects to Justice Ginsburg tomorrow. Two Republican senators who are committee chairmen have released a report on Joe Biden's son, Hunter. They say Hunter Biden's relationship with a Ukrainian energy company was problematic, but NPR's Ryan Lucas reports they did not show his actions affected U.S. policy toward Ukraine.
The 87-page report from Republican Senators Ron Johnson and Chuck Grassley looks at Hunter Biden's business dealings when his father, Joe Biden, was serving as vice president. It delves into the younger Biden's position on the board of a corrupt Ukrainian gas company called Burisma. The GOP report cites two State Department officials who raised concerns about Hunter Biden's work for the company, saying it was, quote, awkward for U.S. officials pushing anti-corruption efforts in the country. The Republican lawmakers' report calls Hunter Biden's work for the Ukrainian firm, quote, problematic, but it also concludes that it is not clear to what extent his role affected American policy towards Ukraine. Ryan Lucas, NPR News, Washington.
Large-scale testing begins today in the U.S. on a fourth potential COVID-19 vaccine. NPR's Joe Palca says the study is expected to involve up to 60,000 volunteers worldwide.
The large study is to show whether the vaccine can prevent disease in people exposed to the coronavirus. It's made by the vaccine division of Johnson & Johnson. Researchers have demonstrated that the vaccine prevents disease in monkeys. Small-scale studies show the vaccine is both safe to use in people and it induces the kind of immune response that should protect people from disease. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine has an advantage over others being tested in that it requires only one injection. Others require two shots spaced weeks apart. Initial results from the study could be available by the end of the year. Joe Palca, NPR News.
The National Weather Service has issued flood warnings for the remnants of Tropical Storm Beta. Warnings are posted from eastern Texas up through Mississippi. Rain from the storm is falling as far north as Kentucky. The Weather Service says the storm is very slow moving. That means it will rain for a much longer period of time on areas still recovering from other hurricanes. On Wall Street, stocks are lower. The Dow Jones Industrials are down 30 points. The NASDAQ is down nearly 78 points. This is NPR News.
And this is WNYC in New York. I'm David First. Mayor de Blasio says more than 9,000 city workers will be furloughed for 5 days from October through next March. It's part of the city's cost-cutting measures to deal with the financial downturn. Officials project it will save $21 million. The mayor says conversations will continue with labor unions, and he's hoping aid from the state comes through.
We need to keep finding savings to keep bridging us to give us a chance to get to something better than layoffs. No one wants to see layoffs, but unfortunately, they're still on the table.
Earlier this month, de Blasio said 500 city hall staffers, including himself, would be taking furloughs. New Jersey officials say suspected drug-related deaths are up this year. This past July saw a 12% increase compared to the previous year. As WNYC's Cameron Rouse reports, health experts say the stress of the pandemic is a factor.
Katie Onateri Hageman is a licensed drug counselor in Mercer County. She says she saw a surge in people reaching out for help over the course of the pandemic, as many found themselves cut off from their support communities.
So there were times when they didn't have people in person, and it was the shift to online. So sometimes in their routine, people probably really want to have that in-person connection, because that's a community within itself.
Onateri Hageman noted that liquor stores were allowed to remain open during the economic shutdown, which may have contributed to people falling back into addictions.
66 degrees now in New York City. Sunshine all day today, a high around 80 degrees this afternoon. Tonight, skies will remain clear. We'll have a low of 62 degrees. And then tomorrow, this sunny, clear, warm weather continues. Partly sunny, a high near 80 degrees. This is WNYC.
Support for NPR comes from LegalZoom, offering legal help for customers that want to take care of things they need to get done without having to leave their home. Learn more at LegalZoom.com.
From WNYC in New York, it's America. Are we ready? Good evening, everyone. I'm Brian Lehrer from WNYC Radio. Welcome to our national call-in special as we ask America, are we ready to vote in a pandemic?
And I'm Christina Greer, political science professor at Fordham University. And the United States tonight is at an intersection of two important milestones. The very grim one that we officially hit the 200,000 mark today, 200,000 Americans who have died from the coronavirus, and the always hopeful milestone of the start of early voting. It is already underway in person in some states, and in some others, you might already have your mail-in ballot.
Right. So in this year of so many safety concerns, what's the safest way to vote? What's the safest way for keeping your body safe from the virus? What's the safest way to make sure your vote actually gets counted? This hour, we will try to answer both questions as we talk about the practical and the political sides. And we ask, America, are we ready to vote in a pandemic?
And Brian, we've got two great guests to help us answer these questions. We'll introduce them in just a minute. But listeners, this is a national call-in, and so you're invited to call in and tell us, how are you getting ready to vote in a pandemic? Are you planning to mail in a ballot, drop one off in a drop box, go for early voting in person, or do it the old-fashioned way and vote on Election Day? Call us up at 844-745-TALK. What's the system in your state, and how are you getting ready to vote in a pandemic? Maybe some of you listening right now have already voted, since early voting in person or mail has begun in some places. If so, how did it go? 844-745-8255. That's 844-745-TALK.
I apologize. Yes, that is 844-745-TALK. And if you're unsure or ambivalent or have your doubts about what's safe for your body or safe for your ballot, we also welcome your questions. We are here to help America be ready to vote in a pandemic. We're here to help you. So your voting questions are welcome here. 844-745-8255. That's 844-745-TALK.
And now let's meet our guests who will be those helpers. Myrna Perez, Director of the Voting Rights and Elections Program at the Brennan Center for Justice, and Ari Berman, Senior Reporter at Mother Jones Magazine and author of Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. Myrna and Ari, we're so happy you could join us. Welcome to America. Are we ready to vote in a pandemic?
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Now, first, to set us right in the present of this first day of fall, who can already vote in the United States, and who's already doing it, Myrna?
Well, a number of states are already sending out their ballot application, their mail ballots to folks, and I think what's really important and what we're trying to tell people is to make sure that however way you vote as early as possible. So if you decide that you're going to vote by mail, then get that ballot as early as you can, apply for it as early as you can, send it back as early as you can. That way you have time to get To check if there's any troubleshooting or any problems on the, that you may encounter. And as soon as your early voting opportunities in your state get started, try and take advantage of them, because you want to be able to be there and have the confidence and relief that you're not going to be there during a crush. But I think one of the big things that, that folks need to remember when they're talking about everything that can go wrong is that for the vast majority of Americans, election day is going to go smoothly. Now, that doesn't mean that there's not going to be hiccups or that there's not going to be problems, and that certainly doesn't mean that we need to be insouciant about those hiccups and those problems. We need to try and fix them. We need to try and identify them. We need to try and troubleshoot them. But I don't want any of these listeners to be deterred from voting because they've heard that there's going to be problems. We're resilient people. We care about our right to vote, and we're going to overcome a lot of the challenges that are facing us.
Right. And Ari, I want to bring you in, given all the unique conditions this year, and that's the understatement of the century. Any early reports on how it's going anywhere that might send an early signal of what people need to be prepared for elsewhere?
It seems to be going relatively well, Christina, given everything that's going on with the pandemic. Just to give you some context, I saw a stat today that said that 64 million absentee ballots have been requested or sent to voters in 30 states so far. So ballots have gone out in a lot of places. Over 265,000 Americans have already voted. So over 150,000 people have voted in North Carolina. A significant number of people have voted in Virginia, Wisconsin as well. We have the best data so far on North Carolina, where, as I said, over 150,000 people have voted by mail. By and large, it's gone pretty smoothly. There were some warning signs, at least initially. Something like 4% of ballots, mail ballots, were rejected. And there was a disparate impact in terms of whose ballots were rejected. Black voters were more likely than white voters to have their ballots rejected, even though they were sending in a much lower number of ballots. So that was disturbing because that was in line with some of the stuff we saw during the primaries where ballots were rejected and there was also a disparate impact. But North Carolina also allows voters to cure their ballots, meaning if there's a problem with the ballot, they can actually fix it. And so the rate of rejection in North Carolina I saw today is down to about 1%. So the good news is that people are voting by mail in large numbers already, and they seem to be understanding the process. Because one of my biggest concerns about this process is we're going to see a huge jump in vote by mail in a lot of states. And the question is, do voters understand all the rules? Or will their ballots be thrown out because of minor technicalities? We saw over 500,000 mail ballots thrown out in the primaries, largely for minor errors or because they arrived too late. And the hope is that there's enough voter education that that number won't rise significantly in this general election.
Let's take our first call. Jess in Atlanta, you're on America, Are We Ready? Hi, Jess. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you. I just had to pull over so that I wouldn't be on the road while we spoke.
That'll keep you
How
safe
are you doing?
From other kinds of accidents than the coronavirus. Doing great. How are you doing, and how are you voting? Have you figured it out?
Yeah, so I'm going to vote early in person.
Why'd you make that choice?
Because for me, I think that it raises my spirits to actually go and see and be there. And so I feel like, you know, if I'm distanced properly outside, I feel comfortable doing that. And I definitely want to vote early because I just need to get it done. I think it's urgent right now.
Jess, thank you so much. And let's go from Atlanta to Fort Worth. Richard in Fort Worth, you're on America, Are We Ready? Hey there,
hey.
Richard.
Hey. You know, I'm going to go, you know, actually physically go vote. I haven't voted since like 1976.
Wait, did you say you haven't voted since 1976? You've taken the last like 50 years off?
And so I'm going to go actually do the physical voting, yes.
Why'd you make that choice?
And I just, excuse me, I just can't take this ignoble Trump guy anymore.
Richard, thank you very much. Let's do one more in this set. Tony in Berkeley, California, you're on America, Are We Ready? And thank you for calling in. How are you going to vote this year?
I'm going to go in person. I'm going to vote in person probably early, and I just don't, like the old-fashioned way. I don't, the post office, I just don't trust the mail. And, you have to remember, the post office has been on the decline since, 03, 04, ever since the age of the Internet. The Internet's taken over. People are not going to pay their bills by the U.S. mail anymore, so they're definitely understaffed. They don't have enough manpower. I don't trust it. What if the mail gets lost? There's been different examples I've seen some news clips across the country where, people did some mock voting things with ballots and they never showed up. Or like you said, one or up to 3% haven't shown up. So I'm just going to do it the old-fashioned way. Go. That's all. I'm going to go in and do it and
get it done. Tony, thank you very much. Everybody else, hang on. We're going to get to a lot more calls this hour. Myrna Perez, let me ask you, since our first informal, unofficial, thoroughly unscientific sample here was all of people who really want to vote in person, even though Ari just told us 64 million absentee ballots have been requested. That's so many orders of magnitude more than ever before. How risky, from a coronavirus standpoint, is voting in person? Is there any good viral spread data, like from the primary season or anything?
The first thing that I want to say is it makes my heart sing to hear so many people attached to their right to vote and so many people talking about how it inspires them and how they're going to make sure that they do it and that they persist in the face of the misinformation and the disinformation and the downerness that we keep hearing about our elections. I think we recently did issued a publication with the Infectious Disease Society of America, and these are people who are in the business of protecting public health against infectious diseases. And what we discovered in our research was that in-person voting can be done safely. It means taking precautions, very sensible precautions that are not going to surprise anybody, have people wear PPE, make sure poll workers are not sick, make sure you're appropriately distancing people, look at the way its design and flow is set up so people don't have to be right next to each other when they're leaving or coming back in. If we put our heads together and are creative and have the right resources, we can conduct in-person polling in a way that is consistent with good public health practices. Having said that, it would be beneficial for as many people as possible to vote by mail, because that means that there's going to be less congestion and those that are at greater risk who do need to vote in person will just have fewer people around them. So again, the number one thing to remember is no matter how you're going to vote, whether that be in person or whether that be via the mail, you vote as early as possible and that you're smart and sensible about what your risk profile is and what your risk tolerance is. And then to remember the others in the community who may not have the health or flexibility or situational needs that that give them a choice, and for you to be as accommodating of those folks as possible. Elections are a time when we all come together, where it doesn't matter if you are rich or poor or black or white or educated or not. When you step into the ballot box, it's supposed to matter the same. And as such, we need to look out for each other and think about each other when we're making our own decisions.
Absolutely. We're up on our first break. When we come back, we'll here's some clips, including one of Trump, one of Biden on all this, and we will take many more of your phone calls on how you plan to vote in a pandemic. This is America, Are We Ready to Vote in a Pandemic? We'll continue in a minute. This is America, Are We Ready to Vote in a Pandemic? I'm Brian Lehrer from WNYC Radio with Fordham University political science professor Christina Greer and our guests, Myrna Perez, director of the Voting Rights and Elections Program at the Brennan Center for Justice, and Ari Berman, senior reporter at Mother Jones Magazine and author of Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. Our phones remain open for you to ask your voting questions and to tell your fellow listeners around the country how you plan to vote in the pandemic to keep your body safe from the virus and to keep your ballot safe from getting lost in the mail or anything else that might happen to it. You are invited at 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255 or 844-745-TALK.
So, Ari, I want to pick up on something that Myrna said right before the break. And you know, I count at least four ways that folks can vote, depending on their state. They can vote by mail. They can drop off an absentee ballot at a drop box. They can vote early in person, or they can vote in person on election day. Do most people have those choices?
Yes, that's a good point, Christina. So the first thing to remember is in 44 states, you can vote by mail for any reason. So that means it's easy to vote by mail in nearly every state in the country. We heard one of the callers raise a concern about the post office. That's obviously what we are hearing a lot. But the post office says they have the capacity to handle all the mail ballots in the country. They just want people to vote early if they do vote by mail. So to request their mail ballot at least 2 weeks before the election and to return it at least a week before the election, not to put pressure on the post office and not to put too much pressure on election officials, try to flatten the absentee ballot curve. People who vote by mail can also drop their ballots off. That's absolutely the case in a bunch of states. This is being litigated right now. So the number of drop boxes where they'll be is somewhat in flux. For example, there is a directive in Ohio from the Secretary of State that there should only be one drop box per county, which is pretty insane given that some counties in Ohio have a lot of people and are very big. A federal court struck that down, but the Secretary of State is appealing. So some of this is in flux, but a lot of states, like in Colorado, there will be hundreds and hundreds of drop boxes. Then also, in-person early voting is an option in most states. 40 states have early voting, meaning that in most states you can vote early. In some states, it's up to 45 days long. We saw people in Virginia voting this weekend. In-person early voting begins in Michigan this week. It began in Vermont this week. It's going to pick up in a bunch of other states. And so what we don't want people to do is show up at the polls on election day if they have an option to vote early or to mail in their ballot the last minute if they can get it in early, because that really increases the risk of voter disenfranchisement. If we're going to try to solve the problems that we're facing because of the pandemic at the polls or through the mail, the easiest way to do it is ahead of time. And luckily, people have that option in nearly every state.
You mentioned Ohio. Let's go next to Ade calling from Cleveland. Ade, you're on America. Are We Ready? Hi there.
Oh, my goodness. Hello. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you voting?
Wonderful. Well, I am going to do the regular old normal way, go on the day and vote just like my ancestors have done many years prior.
Thank you very much. Maybe we have a correlation, if not causation. People who call public radio talk shows vote in person. Ben in Auburn, Alabama. You're on America. Are We Ready? Hi, Ben.
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
What do you think about this election, at least how to cast a ballot in it?
Well, I'm really happy about it because I went on and myself and my wife, we voted last week.
Already voted.
Together. And it was organized. They really were comprehensive in showing us what to do. It was safe, and I'm glad that's over.
Ben, thank you very much. How reliable at this point, Myrna, do you consider the post office? We know that they were removing mailboxes and sorting machines in various places. But Trump's Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy, said this in congressional testimony a few weeks ago.
I want to begin by assuring this committee and the American public that the Postal Service is fully capable and committed to delivering the nation's ballots securely and on time. This sacred duty is my number one priority between now and Election Day. To be clear, we will do everything we can to handle and deliver election mail in a manner consistent with the proven processes and procedures that we have relied upon for years. Nevertheless, I encourage all Americans who choose to vote by mail to request their ballots early and to vote early as a common sense best practice.
Louis DeJoy, but not everyone's buy-in has confidence. Today on MSNBC, the Attorney General of Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro, was a guest with Ayman Mohideen, and he had some, some doubt. Let's listen.
Louis DeJoy and the leadership at the United States Postal Service made concrete and illegal changes back in July that had the effect of slowing down the mail. And while I know he testified even before Congress and said he wouldn't make any other changes going forward, the reality is the damage is already done. We can prove it. And the effect of that damage is that it has slowed down the mail and made it more of a process for voters than it needs to be.
So are you confident, Myrna Perez, with those 64 million absentee ballots out, regardless of what the people calling into the show are saying? So far, we know so many people are voting absentee or mail in. And are you confident, or do you have advice for it?
My job is to be a worry ward, and I don't think the question is much as confidence as it is prepared. The post office is important to Americans for a whole bunch of reasons. In addition to just voting, people get their prescriptions, people get beloved connections to other people. People are making sure that they get paychecks and the like in the mail. So I think we need a strong and robust post office. But I do think the advice that has been consistent, irrespective of who is saying it, is that you want to vote early if you're going to be voting by mail, also if you're going to be voting in person, because you want to be able to account for slowdowns and glitches. Many states, not all of them, but many states have tracking systems whereby you can actually see where your ballot is in the pipeline, and you can always call your election office to make sure that it has been received and is in the queue for being processed. So I think if voters vote early, including by mail, they're going to be in a good position to have a ballot that counts, and they can also do the follow-up to make sure that they weren't subject to any challenges and correct for it if there were. So I think voters should feel prepared, voters should feel resilient, and voters should be comforted by the fact that for the vast majority of Americans, elections are going to run smoothly. But it makes sense to make sure that you take all the steps you can encourage the likelihood that you will be among those voters that don't have any challenges, and that means voting early.
Brian, let's hear from Meredith from Scarborough, Maine, next.
Great. Meredith, you're on America. Are we ready?
Good evening. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to answer the question for asking myself, my husband, and my mother. I vote in Colorado, and for years, all of our votes are by mail. There's no problem. I go online, and I'm able to track that they receive my ballot. And I expect to receive that sometime in October. And my husband votes in Virginia, and he just voted in early voting on the first day, which was last Friday. And there were quite a number of people in line, but it was all orderly and everybody was spaced apart. And he had no questions about who he was going to vote for, so he wanted to go ahead and get it done. The question we have for my mother, who votes in Maine, is we've ordered her absentee ballot, which is how she typically votes. The only thing we may do this year is possibly still take it in person because of the concern that since she's 87 and her signature is not always consistent. I'm concerned that they would try to invalidate her vote.
That's such a great question, and I think it applies to many, many people. Someone was asking me a similar question personally just the other day. Ari Berman, can you help Meredith and anyone else who may, for whatever reason, have a shaky handwriting at this point in their life or any other reason to believe that their absentee ballot might incorrectly be looked on as not their own?
Yeah, so this is a good point, and Myrna probably knows more about this than I do, so I'm going to defer to her in a second. But it is true that one of the reasons why ballots are thrown out is because of a quote-unquote mismatched signature, and sometimes this is done by election officials who aren't really experts in signatures. And so one thing that some states have done, like in Pennsylvania, they have said there was a directive from the Secretary of State that said that ballots should not be thrown out solely for mismatched signatures. Or in other states, voters should be given notification if they have a quote-unquote mismatched signature, because this is something that could trip up a number of voters without really doing anything wrong. But I'm not sure about what the specific law in Maine is. I don't know. Myrna, do you know, or maybe you have more context on this?
Well, the one thing that I would say, Ari, and I think this is a worry of our own making, you know, organizations like the Brennan Center, great journalists like Ari, did a really good job highlighting the problem. And it is a very real concern in some states that the really rigid and anti-voter signature matching is responsible for kicking out of a lot of voters. But I would note that those problems that people point to and those states that people point to are a handful. And somehow we tended to nationalize this concern when, you know, it was the same handful of states that were causing most of the problems and getting most of the attention. So I think if anybody has a concern, before you do something heroic, I would call your election office, irrespective of what state you're in, ask them what the procedures are, ask them what you can do, and they'll walk you through it. I mean, I think we have enough time now that we can troubleshoot most of the issues. And I, you know, I'm a civil rights lawyer, so that means I engage in the kind of thinking that if we work long enough and hard enough, we will be able to bend the moral arc of the universe closer to justice. And I think we can all feel very, very good about the progress that this country has made in the mere months since the coronavirus hit us so hard. So many states have changed their policies in a pro-voter way. And I think we're only going to benefit from people realizing that our democracy works best when all of us are participating. So rather than taking something that you've heard happens in a state like, let's say, Georgia, which was once very notorious for having a really stringent matching requirement for signatures, find out what your own state policy is and call ahead and ask your election office, what can I do to make sure that this doesn't happen to me? And hopefully they'll reassure you. We cannot nationalize the exceptions to the rules. And I do think that we've done that a bit by trying to raise the concern. We've over-scared voters who really don't need to be as worried about it as they would if they lived in another state.
Hmm. Thanks, Myrna. Brian, let's go to Spencer from Berkeley Heights, New Jersey, please.
Hi, Spencer. You're on America. Are We Ready?
Yes, how are you?
Okay. I see you've hit a snag with a mail-in ballot.
Yeah. I've opted to do mail-in ballots this election because with regard to COVID-19, both my wife and daughter are in the at-risk category. So mail-in ballot was available to anyone in the state of New Jersey. Union County has a drop box, easy enough to take care of, or so I thought. The one thing I didn't take into account for was my being my own worst enemy. Multiple columns on the ballot. My wife and I discussed options. She said, vote everyone in one particular column except for this row, which you should vote in a different column because I know this particular candidate and I can vouch for them. So I went ahead and put in that specific candidate in that specific column first. and then proceeded to fill in the other column as discussed, got lackadaisical and distracted, and then filled in the same row in that column so that for one particular entry, I had voted twice. And that then basically rendered my entire ballot null and void and had to request another one from the county administrative assistant for voting. And I'm still waiting for that to show up.
So Myrna and Ari, who wants it? What can Spencer in Berkeley Heights, New Jersey do? And is this a problem that other people are having?
Well, so I'm a New Jersey voter myself. I vote in Jersey City. And I will say that what you did was what we sometimes call an overvote, which means you voted for more candidates than you're supposed to in the same contest. I think there are a couple of things. One, you did exactly what you were supposed to do, right? You called. You're going to get another ballot. It's going to come to you. You're going to return it in time. If you get nervous about it, you'll go to the in-person option that you have. I also think that we should do a better job of designing our ballots so that it's harder for people to make mistakes. One of the things that Ari mentioned earlier was the fact that we need voter education because people are going to be doing it a new way for the vast majority, or a lot of people are going to be voting in a new way. And sometimes people don't know that they have certain technical requirements. So, for example, in Pennsylvania, you have to use a particular envelope that we call the privacy sleeve. So the nuts and bolts of a state's mail balloting processes will have some peculiarities, but you did exactly what you were supposed to do. You recognized the problem, you called it, you're getting a replacement, and hopefully it'll work out for you. If you don't get your ballot in a couple of days, go back.
Good modeling for other people who may find themselves in that position. Spencer, good service calling in. Let me sneak in Nicole in Dallas before we have to go to a break, because I think Nicole has a little quick advice based on her experience. Right, Nicole? Hi there.
Hi. Yes, I served as an election clerk for many years, and I'm sure that my observations are relevant in any jurisdiction. But first of all, if you plan to vote early, I would not vote on the first day or the last day. You want to shoot for the middle. Make sure your registration is current. If you have moved even within your jurisdiction, you want to make sure your registration is updated by next week. If you are voting on election day, don't go first thing in the morning, don't go at lunchtime, don't go at the very end of the day. And you want to allow enough time to vote because
and I have to
your election cycle, you tend to have long ballots.
Nicole,
with constitutional
good advice, and we're up against a break, so I have to jump in. This is America, Are We Ready to Vote in a Pandemic? We'll continue in a minute. This is America, Are We Ready to Vote in a Pandemic? I'm Brian Lehrer from WNYC Radio with Fordham University political science professor Christina Greer and our guests Myrna Perez, director of the Voting Rights and Elections Program at the Brennan Center for Justice, and Ari Berman, senior reporter at Mother Jones and author of Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America.
Myrna mentioned that we were possibly over-scaring voters. And Ari, I wanted to ask you just a question about voter intimidation and suppression tactics that we've seen thus far. We've already heard about long lines in Virginia and some intimidating tactics by, we believe, private sector people. Is there anything like that going on that you know of? And what are some of the suppression tactics that you're seeing across some of the swing states, especially thus far?
We haven't seen much of that so far in the early days of people voting, but I am concerned about that for a few different reasons. The president said a few months back that he wanted to have sheriffs and other police at the polls. That is illegal, and they are unable to do that. But it's also true that
For over 30 years, there was a consent decree preventing the Republican Party from doing what was called ballot security operations. This actually originated in New Jersey, where the Republican Party tried to remove voters from the voting rolls in predominantly minority communities in cities like Trenton and Newark. And then they stationed off-duty cops there. And they carried weapons and they wore these armbands that said the National Ballot Security Task Force. And this led to the Republican Party being hit with a consent decree that said you can't do this kind of stuff anymore. And that court decree recently expired. So the Republican Party can now do this kind of poll watching they were not able to do in the past. Now, there hasn't really been much evidence beyond what we saw in Virginia that they're going to do this on a broad scale. But the Republican Party said they were going to try to recruit 50,000 poll watchers. Now, I'm not sure they're going to get there. It would be illegal for them to try to intimidate voters at the polls, to try to use law enforcement to do that. But it's one of many concerns we have right now. And then, of course, there are just the traditional concerns about restricting voter access, things like voter ID laws, or things like not allowing people to register to vote online, or things like closing polling places. All of this stuff has been magnified in the pandemic because people are already confused about voting, and then you add restrictive laws on top of this, and it becomes more difficult to vote. That said, Myrna made a good point, which is that courts in a lot of states are actually expanding access to vote. So, for example, they're giving people more time to cast a ballot. There have been court decisions in Georgia and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and Michigan and other states, for example, saying that if your ballot is postmarked by Election Day or postmarked the day before the election, it doesn't have to arrive by Election Day. It can arrive a few days later or maybe even a week or two later. So if people are worried about mail delays, that kind of thing will go a long way towards ensuring that ballots aren't thrown out if they're delayed a little bit, as long as you mailed them on time. So I think the courts are trying to make voting easier. The worry, of course, is that some of the Trump appointees are very conservative. And of course, if we get a sixth Supreme Court justice on the Supreme Court and they hear some sort of voting dispute either before the election or after, that could be a very volatile situation.
Janet in New Roads, Louisiana. You're on America, Are We Ready? Hi, Janet. Thank you so much for calling in.
Hi. I plan on voting absentee because Louisiana is the only state in the nation that has all electronic touchscreen voting with no paper trail. So essentially, there is no way for me to actually know if my vote has been counted. Louisiana is also one of the states that has one of the most restrictive qualifications for absentee voting. Now, I'm able to vote absentee because I'm over 65. But for other people are simply concerned about exposure to COVID. That's not a good enough reason to receive an absentee ballot in Louisiana. I have called our Secretary of State's office to ensure that the paper ballot that I fill out is fed into a physical machine that reads the ballot and then presents the votes. So hopefully I will actually know if my ballot is counted, although at this point Louisiana has no program for me to be able to log in and see if, in fact, my paper ballot has been counted.
So you plan to vote by mail-in ballot because you don't trust the in-person ballot not to be manipulated because there's no backup paper trail to the computer vote. Am I hearing that right?
That is correct. I actually plan to drop it off at the Registrar of Voters, which I can do. Mm-hmm. Louisiana, I believe our ballots have to request it by October the 13th, and I have an option to drop it off. So rather than put it in the mail, I plan to drop it into one of the ballot boxes.
That's a drop
box. That's correct.
A paper ballot. And Janet, I'm going to leave it there for time, but thank you very, very much. And to that point, Ari Berman, you know, President Trump tries to play up the risk of voter fraud way beyond what history would suggest the risk is. But you hear Janet's suspicion. Are you at all concerned about voter fraud or hacking by Russia or China or manipulation by local election officials who may have an interest, which is, I think, what Janet was implying, or anything?
I'm not really concerned about voter fraud because voter fraud is a very small problem in American elections, including vote by mail fraud. The Heritage Foundation, which is very conservative and a supporter of President Trump, they found only 143 criminal convictions for mail ballot fraud over the past 20 years, which equals out to 0.0006% of total votes cast. There's been a ton of disinformation from the president, from the attorney general about foreign countries trying to manipulate mail-in ballots. That would be very, very difficult, if not impossible, for them to do. And so pretty much all of the concerns raised about mail ballot fraud have been completely overstated. I'm much more worried about voters being disenfranchised because they don't understand the rules of mail voting than I am about widespread or major mail ballot fraud. There is concern in states that don't have paper backups about electronic voting machines. I was just looking online, and Louisiana evidently was supposed to get new machines that would have a paper backup, but I don't know if they've actually gotten those machines in ready for 2020. I think in this day and age, it just makes sense for everyone to have the assurance that their vote is counted, whether it's by mail or by person. Have the assurance that if they vote by mail, they'll know it's counted, and have the assurance that if they vote in person, there'll be a record of their vote counting. So it makes sense that voters would want that, but we haven't seen evidence of these kind of things being manipulated.
So Myrna, we have people who are prepared to vote on election day. We have people who are prepared to vote early. What should our listeners be prepared to expect on election night and likely afterwards for getting a full count, especially in close states, some of the states that Ari's mentioned previously?
Well, you guys are doing a great service, public education to your voters, and Ari needs to hear this too, my good friend Ari. We need to be prepared for the fact that we are not likely to know who won on election night. And I think some of the demand for that comes from journalists. There are some very pro-voter reasons why we may not find out who won on election night. If we want to give voters till the very last possible moment to return their mail ballot, that means they're not all going to be in on election night. If we want to give voters the opportunity to fix any technical defects, like the concern over the signature that the woman from the voter from Maine had, we're not going to find out on election night because they need time to find out that there was a problem and time to go in and fix it. And if we are going to conduct the kinds of audits for transparency to make sure that foreign cyber criminals didn't attack our systems like the last voter just mentioned, then we're going to need some time. So I think one big thing that all listeners can do here is be ready to wait think about elections more like election week rather than an election night. You don't vote just on one day. We have early voting, and so we're not going to get the results in just one night, especially when we expect a lot more people voting by mail. So my hope is that folks are ready for ready to wait a bit and ready to see how it all unfolds, and that they do their part in making sure that they and their family and their friends and neighbors are able to go to the polls.
Indeed. Let's hear from Angela in Atlanta. Angela, you're on the line.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. Welcome.
Good. Okay. So, it looks
so
like
how do you
delayed.
Plan on voting?
Yeah, my plan is the same way it was for the primary. By the time the early voting started, I hadn't received my mail-in ballot. So I went in second day. I tried to go, not the first day, but the second day, first thing in the morning, first person in line, and try to take a snack, whatever time of day it is, take your food, something, breakfast, lunch, or dinner. I drape down like I'm a desert dweller. I put on the glass, the glasses, the gloves, the mask, anything I need to protect myself because I do have comorbidities. And I just don't trust the Secretary of State program. So let's see what else. I try to make sure that all my adult children, whether they live in the house or not, understand what the drill is and adhere to it. And Christina, you have a very nice voice on the radio.
Thank you so much. And good luck voting in the general election.
And we all agree about her voice. Dana in White Marsh, here, Pennsylvania. Here. You're on America. Are We Ready? Hi, Dana.
Hi. I wanted to thank you for taking my call, but also I wanted to address, I think it's wonderful that Trevor Noah and others are calling for folks to work the polls on Election Day because there's a shortage. I don't know exactly what this would look like, but this, you know, Pennsylvania is, of course, a very important state coming up. And in my experience, I have actually worked the local polls in elections before, and there's so much cronyism amongst the poll workers that exists. And, you know, they tend to sort of like bully the new folks. And I know that one of your speakers said that, you know, election fraud is not a concern. But just folks being sort of left out of that process when they do want to volunteer and show up at the polls. I just wish that there was kind of a rhetorical in a way, but I wish there was a better way to get folks to work at the polls without them feeling shut out, because there is such a tendency for folks to go and have sort of done this work for the last 20 or 30 years and all know each other. Thank you.
Well, I think this is your year, because a lot of those folks that have been doing it for 20 years are not signing up this year because they have health risks. So this is an opportunity for folks who have wanted to perform this community service to have an opportunity to do it. We're going to have a lot of brand new poll workers. Now, it is true that our election workers aren't really used to doing the kind of intake to be able to manage the influx of volunteers. So there may be some bumps in that way, but I think we can expect a lot of first-time poll workers this election. So I want to thank you for your past service, and I hope you're not deterred and continue to do that service again in the future.
You know, we've heard from people who are voting in person because they don't trust the mail-in system. We've heard people who are voting by mail because they don't trust the in-person system. So let me go to what in politics they might call the nuclear option. There was this recent provocative moment from a Trump rally. This is the one in North Carolina, where he suggested that supporters vote by mail and then, to make sure they get counted, show up on election day too. Listen.
They'll go out and they'll vote, and they're going to have to go and check their vote by going to the poll and voting that way, because if it tabulates, then they won't be able to do that. So let them send it in and let them go vote. And if their system's as good as they say it is, then obviously they won't be able to vote. If it isn't tabulated, they'll be able to vote. So that's the way it is. And that's what they should do.
So that's illegal, as I understand it, to be perfectly clear about that. But Ari Berman, does he have a certain point that people of any party should consider? Like, if you voted by mail and the system works, they will see that you voted when you show up on election day and you'll be turned away. You won't actually vote twice. Maybe you'll be arrested, too. I don't know. But if your mail-in ballot was not registered as received for any reason, and we've already had calls tonight from people to whom that's happening, then you'll get to vote in a way that will be registered. Is there any logic to it?
I'm afraid there isn't, Brian, because in North Carolina, you can track your absentee ballot online, just like you can in many other states. So people don't need to show up at the polls to inquire about what's happened with their mail ballot. So they can actually do it at home. And this could be a really disastrous situation because, election officials are already, sorry, Brad, I need some water.
That's okay. Mary, you could even pick up that answer.
Yeah, no, maybe I'll jump in
you're
here.
You're on the same page,
I'll jump in
I
here.
Think.
Yeah, no, I'll jump in here. Look, I want to be very clear that gamesmanship and overtaxing poll workers and election administrators is something that people should just not be doing right now. But many, many states contemplate that voters are going to change their mind. And it is, in fact, true that states have mechanisms to make sure that people don't cast a ballot. So I think there's a big difference between a voter who gets a ballot at the end or forgets about the deadline and is worried that it's not going to arrive in time and then decides to go in person versus someone who's trying to test the system to prove a point. I don't want voters to be scared. I think Ari's exactly right. There are better ways than casting a ballot and going in person. But if you have a legitimate concern that your mail ballot is not going to arrive in time, check your state, but most states account for voters to be able to change their mind. But that's really, really different than purposely trying to overtax election administrators because you want a political point to prove.
Sure.
You know, we've only got about a minute left. And first of all, I want to thank our guests for providing so much great information to people and our callers from around the country for providing so much great information to people. Christina Greer, for you as a political science professor, do you have any closing thoughts for this hour? I mean, we've heard so much and there are still so many ambiguities.
Right. I just want to thank Myrna and Ari for providing some clarification and remind our listeners that depending on their state, you know, we have several weeks where they can make sure they're registered, and they can also think about if they want to vote in person on Election Day or vote early, vote by mail, or vote using a drop box. And also, let's prepare ourselves. We're hopefully we'll know something on November 3rd, but as Myrna has braced us for this, we should be prepared that this might be a much longer conversation, possibly lasting a week or more, because so many people want to exercise their right to vote for this important election. And it's not just about us going out to vote. We need to make sure that our family members and community members are also prepared with a voting plan as well.
Well, we are out of time for this hour of your plans and stories and answers to the question, America, are we ready to vote in a pandemic? Myrna and Ari, thank you one more time. And this hour was produced by Megan Ryan, Lisa Allison, and Zach Goddard-Cohen. That's Jason Isaac at the audio controls. With Fordham University political science professor Christina Greer, I'm Brian Lehrer.